Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 29 of Road to War. I'm Nick.
I'm Mike.
I'm Billy.
I'm Michael.
And holy shit, are we on 29?
I think we're actually on 28.
Are we on 28? I think we're on 29.
Well, if the mom site hadn't crapped itself, I could check. But mom is down today.
And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
All right.
I could actually check on my computer because I have a list of the episodes.
Whatever. 28 or 29.
28 or 29. I'm pretty sure it's 29.
Flip a coin.
All right.
All right. So I'm going to kick it over to Billy and let him explain today's topic because... It's more of his thing than mine.
And before Billy gets into it, stick around to the very end of the podcast because that's when we do news and announcements, apparently. We were trying to talk Nick into doing it before.
Because that's where it makes sense to do it. But Nick is the captain of
the
ship.
But there's some really cool stuff at the end.
It was a power struggle and I had to put my foot down on the principle of the matter.
Anyway. So.
He has the recording.
So the suggested topic is a really loose one. Hopefully just we'll engage in some conversation about the psychology behind War Machine.
Mike loves it loose.
Or the psychology within the game.
That was Will that was loose.
That was Will, not me.
Okay.
Enough of all that. You know, and that incorporates like list chicken, certain mechanics in the game that can break an opponent down like mentally, things you hate to see across the board that'll make you play a little differently or worse. And then, you know, players at your local game store that get in your head and you have a really hard time beating them when you should or, you know, that kind of thing. Reactions to bad dice. Just, you know, there's all kinds of stuff. All kinds of psychology elements within this game.
Most people can be shaken. There's some people that just go with the flow really well. Like, I think Chuck is that way a lot. He doesn't really get
shaken. That's a prime example, actually.
Chuck, and also, I think Flanzer is that way a lot, too. We talked about that.
People who go on tilt. People who don't go on tilt.
Who really,
I would disagree about Flanzer.
I would also, Jason's my boy, but.
That guy tilts like nobody.
I think Jason
I think he shakes things off and has a very dynamic game.
I think he gets loud
about it. I'm not
going to
fanboy Flanzer anymore, but I'll just leave it at that.
I'm sure everybody who is a regular convention traveler has heard Flanzer's dulcet tones yelling over the crowd, oh, you know, 9 on 2 dice, yeah? I mean, you know, I guess that's about average.
That's average. No, that's true. Right. He does that, but I don't think it actually affects his choices when he plays the game. He'll make a big deal about it, but I think that's the way he shakes it off.
Oh yeah, man. Jason's good enough to not let things.
Yeah. So I think the big problem is when it comes to people getting in your head or you going on tilt is when you might scream and yell, or even if you're just quiet and you keep it inside, but then you start getting really upset and doing really stupid things, getting a little bit over aggressive.
Just run your models for no reason.
Probably my biggest problem is I go on tilt really easily, especially against certain factions like Minoth.
Especially when he plays me.
Harvey tilts me like nobody's business.
And Morvana too.
It's just like, wow, I put my entire army into that one model and it didn't die.
I've gone on tilt one time.
Was it against me?
No, in the history of me playing this game, one time against Jake at Gen Con.
I was about to ask if it was that game.
That was it. And it was post-game.
I was about to say, yeah, the game was over.
You know, I had one, stuck my hand out to shake his hand, and he was like, you sure you don't want to just shoot some more stuff? Get some VP, or some battle points? Why not? You know, get some extra points destroyed. So I shot a Ravagor. It was Lilith versus Lilith. And, I shot a Ravagor with a bolt thrower and pushed him back into contesting a flag, which is, you know, I'd been playing for like 8 months, but, yeah, at that moment, I lost it on myself. But anyway, other than that, I don't ever really get shaken.
Yeah, I don't think I really went on tilt until Morvana came out. But other than that...
You went on tilt the other day when we were playing, Mike.
With Kane?
Yeah. You walked all the way. You walked like 40 feet away.
When it couldn't roll a 4 on... Or couldn't roll a 5 on 3 dice? Like three
no, it was row. When... It was when... The second time my Risen killed one of your Avengers with a free strike.
Oh, that's true. So I'm like, run the Venger. I went in between two Risen on a charge, and the first one killed.
At Alexia. You were charging Alexia.
I was charging Alexia with the Venger. I impacted one Risen, I think, and it didn't tough, and I went through him, and I think I took a free strike from another one.
Yeah, you just took the free strike from one the first time.
And he needs a 15 to kill the Venger, and he rolls a 16. And I'm like, okay, Alexia's dead. And then later I ran another Venger away from a Risen that just engaged him. He rolled a 15 and killed me.
Do we think everybody knows what going on tilt means or should we explain
that? We should probably explain it.
Going on tilt is a poker term that means that you lose your cool, and it generally means that, in general it just means you lose your cool, but it's also, most of the time it affects your decision making and...
Leads to bad play.
It leads to bad play in general.
Yeah, you either like, the most common and simple, example of it is if you just start getting crushed and you just start getting upset, like if you feel like you can't do anything, and you just start just trying to kill random models. And you're not really trying, you're not using any plan to pick them off, but you're just like running things and just like, oh, this will make me feel better because at least I'm like killing models or moving from the table. And your opponent could just be like feeding them to you one at a time, because I've seen like the more experienced players like do that. Like if they see their opponents getting upset and they just start rushing their models, I'm like, sweet, come over, just walk over here and kill this model. It's like, oh no, you killed my warjack. And meanwhile, they're capturing our point over somewhere else while you're just
I think we can zoom out a little bit more. I think it generally just means that when you go on tilt, you tend to focus in on, you tend to zoom in a little bit and focus in on the one thing that you're doing and miss other things. You captivate on small wins to try to balance that.
I don't know. I've also kind of always thought of going on tilt as kind of being like, you kind of know you're going to lose and you've given up on the game. You just want to get it over with.
Yeah, but sometimes you can go on tilt.
I think that's something
you can go on tilt with the game.
That's kind of just giving up.
Yeah, you can go on tilt with the game still winnable.
Yeah.
And just make a couple bad decisions to you know, lose the edge you might have otherwise.
You see this happen a lot. You'll see, and actually I see a lot of very good players do this, but they'll have a complicated plan. And there will be a really important piece that a stalker has to remove this. And it doesn't happen for some reason. And their dice fail them or something, and they can't get rid of the piece that they need to that everything else is contingent on, and they will go on a minor tilt at that point.
Because that, I'd say
it
I do that.
Breaks their plan for that turn.
Yeah, and or they'll have a very complex plan that begins, or one of the first few steps is Iris hitting a 3, and she rolls snake eyes, and that's just it. Like, that was the easy part, and that one didn't work out, so now the rest of the plan is gone.
Yeah, and then it's like what happened to me when I played Keith. And he went for the feat at War Machine Weekend. And I pretty much went on tilt and was like, fuck it. I'm just going to take everything in the cane and see what happens. And, you know, I happened to roll some boxcars, which is cool. But I also, like, got ahead of myself and forgot to acquire and all that. So I definitely went on tilt. I was like, I'm going to die. Fuck it. I'm going. And I didn't, like, reassess at certain points or certain things, you know, after I missed shooting at Kane with, you know, with Iris and needing the 8, if I'd have gotten that, maybe I'd go forward. But definitely went on tilt in that game.
Oh. And sometimes a player can just get in your head. I mean, sometimes after you've played, especially around the store, if you play the same person a lot, or you play or among the same group of 5 or 6 players, or if you travel a lot and you play really competitively and you just keep hitting the same guy in the second round of Masters and they beat you, like, eventually the matchup isn't nearly as important as the psychological aspect of it. And there's,
it can even go beyond just like a given player. You know, maybe you make the Masters and you lose round one every time.
Right. Yeah, that too.
Like, it's kind of in Flanzer's head that he hasn't gotten out of the first round of the Invitational.
That's true.
Cause he talks about it somewhat.
I mean, and there are sports psychologists that get paid a lot of money to help athletes overcome similar things. And I think it's just competition.
Yeah, I'm seeing one right now.
Any trends of, I have no doubt. Mike takes it seriously.
You got the yips, Mike?
Whoa.
How can you have the yips already? You haven't just won.
Wait.
I'm not even sure
what are
that
the yips?
The yips?
Yeah.
It's just like when...
Is that a gamer term that I wouldn't know?
No, it's not. Like it's actually a sports term.
Sports term. You guys have never heard of the yips?
No, fucking explain it, man. We're all waiting.
It's just like, you know,
I think it's a sports term.
Just, you know, all of a sudden can't hit at all anymore. It's called having the yips. All right, look it up right now.
I watched baseball for a long time and I've never fucking
It's actually like the apparent loss of like your like coordination or fine motor skills for no reason. It's usually when you get really nervous about something, like, let's say that you're able to hit a free throw all day normally, and then something happens that makes you like doubt yourself horribly, and then you just cannot
hit
those shots anymore. What? Yeah, Nick.
I've never doubted myself before sex, Mike.
But yeah.
Billy's face.
Nick's like, cut that out.
From the dictionary, nervous twitching or tension that destroys the concentration and spoils performance. Boosh.
That's like what I said.
Define.
Okay. Now anyways. Okay.
I'm just going to stay quiet. I could have slammed everyone at the table just now.
No more drinking whiskey on podcasts, I think is what we're learning right now.
Everything's fine.
Oh, okay.
It really, if there are children listening to this, then I'm sorry that you found that out about Nick.
What, that I've had sex?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let's not think about that anymore.
Yeah, that's...
Anyways,
I'm sorry, folks.
I'm probably only the second most unpleasant person to think about having sex here.
That's a lot.
What else puts people on... Okay, one thing that does this to a lot of people is, and this happens with Billy's List sometimes, and when you were playing Chuck, I was like, it's going to come down to the tough rolls. on the risen, on the boom howlers. And like the boom howlers, when they four up tough and they make like 5 out of 7 or 6 out of 8. Like,
it's the fourth in a row. I've watched my opponents long enough now. The breaking point, like the point where they're really going to either make it through okay, is on the fourth one in a row.
Well, because that happens 1 out of every 16 times.
Well, when it happens, and it seems to happen more.
I know, right?
But when it happens,
probably a little bit of confirmation.
When it happens, there's generally a hesitation between when my opponent makes the next roll. They're like, I see the exhale,
yeah,
and so just the deflation.
But the thing is, how do you deal with that? Like, that's something that's out of your control.
You can't. You just have to. I mean, just the same way I have to suffer. See, if I fail 4 in a row, it's not that big of a deal. When I lose 6 models without making one, I have the same check. Yeah. And luckily, I've played that list so much that I'm used to it. But if you normally don't play against boom howlers that can't be knocked down, and then suddenly for the one in maybe the third time ever you're playing them, and they hit 4, 5, 6, maybe even 8 out of 9 tough rolls, you're just like that's the most broken thing ever. I just put my whole army into them and lost 1 model.
Yeah, like Harvey.
You're playing Harvey.
Something like that. But at least Harvey's taking damage, and most of the time you have a way to reach out and touch her.
Sometimes I'm rolling a lot of tough rolls, but not on 4-ups.
Okay, and this is kind of not really a tangent. So would you say, like, things that put you on tilt, would you try to put things in a list that will help you avoid that? Like, the best example for, like, Boomhowlers would be, like, if you're playing Crix or something, you take something that deals with tough, which you should probably do anyways because tough is a problematic game mechanic for a lot of lists that need to clear things anyways. But it's like, if you know that you have a solution to it, it's better than, like, when you're playing Signar, you don't really have a way of getting
most
tough.
Things don't. Do most factions have a way to, I mean, Entropic is gross.
Well, to answer your question, I think if it's a problem for you as a player,
yeah,
you should, I mean, if you're like, well, I was doing great until there were 7 tough rolls made over there, or, yeah, I was doing great until I failed command on both of my units. Or, I mean, those things that can really just happen, that's on one dice roll that just completely alters game state. Yeah, I mean, put Rupert in that list. Make sure you drop Saxons, you know, or make sure you drop a model that maybe helps, but isn't crucial to your ability to perform.
Okay.
You know, drop Gorman for Rupert because although ideally on paper, Gorman's clearly the best 2 points.
Yeah.
But you really need to be able to rally a unit and use them because you'll kind of lose it if your Kayazi failed or whatever, you know?
Yeah. All right, makes sense.
Yeah. I guess Rupert doesn't work for Gorman. You follow what I'm saying.
No, I know what you understand.
I like that you didn't correct me there, though.
I was thinking about it. I was like, Billy doesn't know. But...
I've never seen him in a Signar, and I thought that was weird.
No, in a Kator army. It's because Kator killed all of his people.
Yeah, we can cut all of this, us being dumb.
Nick's looking at it like, that's not happening.
All right, anyways, so back on track.
So tough is really annoying.
Yeah, so for a while, like, Nick, you were in my head, and for a while, I mean, and I'm Signar on your Scorn, so that makes sense, but I even matchups where I felt like I should win and I felt good going in, it would just... everything would be going right, and then it just would fail completely.
That game we played at TempleCon.
I don't even want to talk about that tournament. Game.
You were so upset at the end of that.
I was. I didn't even go on full tilt, but I was really aggravated. Fully charged, fully loaded, fully bonded, temporal accelerated Stormwall can't kill a sentry. That's ridiculous.
Sentries are hard.
That's ridiculous.
They're hard to kill.
You know sentries have set
up. Walking up. Boom, boom, boom. Couldn't drop him.
You couldn't roll a 5?
7 attacks. Needing a 5 to hit. Dice -1.
Seems bad.
Seems awful.
That's like, what, 70?
Every to hit roll was a 4 or less, and if it wasn't, the damage roll was a 6 or less. It was just
it's
dumb.
It's not as bad as snake.
Yeah. It was that.
It's like, you did kill it, though.
I left him with 5 boxes.
Yeah, a beast with 5 boxes is a fully functioning beast.
Yeah, yeah.
You should have to spend 38 points of model to kill the sentry.
Well, anyway, the point is, and then after that, I came in with, like, I feeded, then I came in with the other one and couldn't kill the bronze back the next turn. I was like,
and Billy was losing at this point.
No, so I was losing it.
So how do you overcome that? Like, when a player's in your head, and you, not something happening in the game, but when you sit down,
it takes a certain amount of self-awareness, I'd say. You have to realize that it's happening, and a lot of times, you just want to get past it and get a quick victory, which is, to speak to your point,
why people rush.
Yeah, you want to rush and kill some models and get the thing back going right in your mind, but it might be better, and a lot of people in poker do this when they go on tilt, they get up and walk away. You know, click it to your time, take 3 minutes, and realize that 3 minutes is probably best getting actualized. You know, say, hey, I'm going to take a second to go grab a drink and just walk away. I mean, they're going to stand there and they're going to be like, well, What's happening just now? And meanwhile, when you get back, like, the game states, the psychological set of the game has kind of changed. Because now there's been a whole break of not playing.
That would be so hard for me to do.
That's actually interesting.
I've never done it.
I have actually.
And it would be really hard to do, but it might, I think it would help some people.
I've seen Hollywood do it once. It wasn't that peaceful because he got upset and threw his dice somewhere and then walked off. But he was just clearing it, taking time to clear his head. And then he came back. Unfortunately, the guy thought he was forfeiting.
Was he trying to find his dice?
No. He had just had some horrid dice.
That was kind of some bullshit, too. If you don't say I'm forfeiting, then you're not forfeiting.
Yeah, I understand.
If the clock's on your time.
Did the guy start picking up his models?
Yeah. And he was like, he forfeited. And Hollywood was like, no, I didn't.
The judges, like, he came back and was like, what happened? He was like, I thought he forfeited. And the judges gave the round to the other guy.
Which really? Was kind of ridiculous.
That's kind of a shitty situation.
Yeah, if he picked up models with the clock running, that guy should lose.
Technically.
But straight up.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I agree with you.
You know that the guy wasn't like, oh, well, he's walking away. I'm going to start picking up some models.
Yeah, I don't think the guy intended it for it to happen, and that's why it gets sticky. It's because
Still.
It's a communication game. You have to let your opponent know, I'm walking away for this reason. I threw my dice and I'm walking away. But technically, it's on your time. You can do whatever you want. I can take a shit for 55 minutes. I can eat my dice if I want to.
Yeah, we're not advising you doing this, but it's like,
try my damnedest.
If you're, like, the thing is, I think Billy, this is a really good point, because I've never actually seen that happen, and people usually stress out, but then they immediately get worried about their time. Of course, this is more advisable on Death Clock than it would be like, I have 10 minutes.
I don't know, but if it's 10 minute turns, you can probably still do it, because 10 minutes is forever.
It really is an eternity. Yeah. But probably not 3 minutes.
Yeah. Like, you can step back and, like...
I don't know. If it's late in the game, you can spare 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you give your opponent...
You just burn your extension. I'm gonna take my extension.
That's actually a pretty...
I have definitely had to do that to go use the restroom.
If I was playing Haley, I'd burn my extension to take a chill out for a second. It'd probably help me in the game against Nick.
This is my new strategy for winning games. Next time I'm on a Death Clock game, I'm just gonna walk off from the table without saying a word for 45 minutes and come back and see if they're still there. And then just pass it back over to them.
Say, I'll be back.
No, just walk off.
Like, you play way too slowly, because then when they're still waiting, if they're for you to come back, they're like, you're like, all right, it's your turn, I guess, and then they're just going to be like, oh, you have 15 minutes left of your turn, have fun, and they're just going to clock you out.
Yeah, I'll just go for the Force Hammer assassination.
That happens sometimes.
So another aspect of the psychology of War Machine is that I think you can kind of try to guess what your opponent thinks. So, and list chicken, like, the list selection process of a tournament or competitive play is a good part of that, right? So you have two lists and they have two lists and you're looking at what they have and they're looking at what you have, and sometimes you find yourself in the position where the matchups are very clear. Like, alright, well, you're playing Menoth, so I'm gonna play this list because I have, you know, this magical shooting or whatever.
Oh,
or
sometimes. You have a blood hag. Oh.
Yeah, or sometimes you're like, well, you're playing Krix and this is my only list.
Yeah.
There's really anything that's really worth a damn against Krix anyway. But other times you find where, like, this list is good against, like, A list is good against A list, and B list is good against B list, but if your A fights my B, I'm screwed. But if my A fights your B, you know, so, I think in those situations, you kinda have to find, I mean, another edge, right? You have to find a way to, and I've seen
a lot of
really...
Or just flip a coin, but, which is not a good idea, but...
I've never seen it happen.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of really good players go up to the table and be like, oh, I don't know what to do against Scar. Like, oh, well, I guess you have Scar. I guess that's it for me.
And they hope
you know, and then you're like, and I've seen really good players do it.
I think John does it. Maybe now it's less subtle since everyone knows it, but he's like, oh, this is such a bad matchup for me. And he just says that over and over and over again. And we're like, yeah, I'm going to crush him. It's a bad matchup for him. It's like, surprise, no, it's actually not. And John's a really good player. So,
and I won't.
He said that when we were up in Iowa, and it was actually a pretty bad matchup for him.
Maybe, but then there's a lot of times where it's not a bad matchup.
Yeah.
And now he does it more of a
And I'm not going to say joke. The I'm not going to say the player's name, but I had a player tell me that he told his opponent that, all right, well, I guess you got me now. And lies if, all right, I guess you have the assassination, knowing that his opponent did not have one.
I'm going to guess that was Jake.
I'm not telling you who it was. It wasn't Jake. But knowing that his opponent didn't have one and was just like, and his opponent's like, what am I missing? What am I missing? And it just got in his head.
It could be Eric.
No.
I'm not going to continue narrowing this down.
I think we're,
this is not 20 questions.
I would like to point out that I think we are kind of flirting with getting in the gray area of the rules. Like, it's okay to try and...
Judge!
What do you mean? You are the judge. I can't really argue
with that. I'm just saying, like, it becomes
what rules
like,
does it break?
It becomes a sportsmanship issue.
It's disingenuous.
If, like, I can tell you, like, I think you can kill me right here, man, but I can't, but if I keep pushing you and pressuring you, I'm like, don't you see it? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, you can kill me right here, just do it.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you can't. Obviously, that's super douchey.
Well, that's super douchey. I'm just saying
there's a fine line and we're kind of pushing it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I've never created an assassination that my opponent didn't have.
I feel like at this point, Billy's still well on the, okay side of the line.
Okay. I'm just saying.
Like, granted, if you took it to the extreme, that, obviously
would cross. It's okay to send my opponent into making a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, there's, I mean, and you got,
auto placement, you have John,
and John, and Damaris has even said, on his podcast, that he'll walk up to a table and be like, oh, this is a terrible matchup, even when he knows it's a good matchup. There's some psychology in this game, and treating it as if using it is an asshole way to play it, I think it's just being a little naive. You know, any kind of competitive, and this is a game. It's a game, but so is basketball. So is football.
And to be fair, apparently because we're from Houston, we're assholes, so this is going to be expected behavior from us. So it's okay.
Whatever.
I think it's because we're from Texas, not necessarily from Houston.
It's just sad that we took their nice things.
They are sad. However, they can talk all the shit they want. I fucking love my Iowa brothers. I like all four of them. Five of them. There's a lot of them from Iowa.
I don't really know Colin, but I like all the rest of them so far.
You know Colin?
Colin's really? A cool guy.
Colin's a cool guy. I like Colin a lot.
I mean, he's cool. We kind
of... Colin is another one of those people that thought I was John.
Yeah. God. Crump used to be my favorite. Now he's my least favorite.
Because he beat you with Kyle?
No, that was expected.
Oh, you did have Siege.
Yeah, that was much expected.
Elder Crump is pretty sweet.
Yep.
I didn't sit at that end of the table. I'm just fucking with you, Crump. I really like you.
They don't listen to this.
No, they really don't.
Maybe not.
I don't think they do. I wouldn't listen to us if I didn't have to... check for edits.
I don't listen to us.
Yes.
That's sorry.
I do.
I know that.
I'm so fucking narcissistic, I'm like, I'm on the fucking radio.
I'm on the radio. You play it for your parents at Thanksgiving. Yeah. Guess who's famous?
I'm a big deal in my local meta.
It's like, what does this mean,
man,
son?
Speaking of mother, my mother can never find out I do a podcast because she will listen to every episode and then ask me questions about it later.
Everyone can never find out I'm on a podcast.
None of my family needs to know about this.
I game under a pseudonym for a reason.
Okay. I'm okay with people knowing.
Yeah, I know. So Mike tells me that, like, the Masters round, the last finals of the Invitational, gets passed around as work. the recording.
Somebody was, like, forwarding around the link to, like, the YouTube. Like, oh, okay. That's kind of cool, I guess. I think it was kind of trolling, though.
Yeah, maybe. All right, so we're off topic again.
No. Okay, so cycling back. List selection. So, I'll give my own personal example is I've got the Haley Double Stormwall list that I've been playing since it came out.
And this is like the perfect example, by the way.
It is a really not, great like, example, actually.
But there's really not, like in my, we'll get to it, but in mine, it really doesn't apply. Cause I can't force somebody into something with something.
Yeah, Menoth is, and Crix is similar also, I think.
But go ahead.
So I have two giant colossals that get armor ridiculous, that's really good against shooting, that completely hides the Warcaster. And the only way to really stop it is things that hit really, really hard, which most of the time...
And fast.
Hard and fast, big threat ranges. And most of the time, that's really long-reaching, hard-hitting models. And Kane is my other list, and it's an infantry swarm with Boomhowlers and Risen and Gun Mages and Blazers and Hunters, and that list is just perfectly set to destroy everything that's good against Haley. And Haley is set perfectly to destroy everything that's good against Kane. And both of them actually are pretty decent against most of the field. I mean, P. Kruger's really good against Kane, and E. Makeda's really good against Haley. But if I pick the other, it's almost an auto loss. Right? And everyone is flipping through iDevices at the moment.
Yeah.
That's true. What he said.
Yeah.
What he said, yes.
I just realized that I was watching porn on my phone today. I don't think I've really done that.
Standard.
On my phone. On your computer at home, yeah. But on your phone?
Why?
What are we talking about now?
You will randomly show me your phone and you're like, look, it's my dick. I don't know where we were. Stop it. I have no idea what we were talking about.
No, let's pick it up.
Okay, so there was definitely an edit back there because we got way
off. It was how... Your E-Haley list and
Kane list. Yeah, so E-Haley and E-Kane, ultimately, if you have one that's really good against one, you still only have a 50% chance of not completely losing. Because
unless you have a mighty Hexerus list, then you're good.
Well, right. It takes a good all-commerce list that's played well in order to, you know, one that's okay against both of them and you have to execute. Whereas if you take, like, an E-Makeda that's amazing against Haley, if you have that as an option, I'm probably going to take Kane. But you can take the psychology one step further And if you're preparing for Signar for those two casters, because let's be honest, about 75% of the competitive Signar players are taking Kane and Haley. I mean, they're just clearly, in my opinion,
I feel
like you can remove the word competitive there and just say 75% of Signar players.
I mean, I'm going to say competitive. No, there's a lot of fun.
There's a lot of players that love their caster.
They love Nemo.
Siege is fun. Nemo 2 is fun. Kara Sloan is a lot of fun. P-Kane is good. P-Kane is legit.
I played a guy that played constant plays. I think it was a Lock and Load. Well, I'm just saying there are people that play them at cons.
I agree. I'm saying 75% of the people are playing Haley and Kane. And because of that, if you prepare for it, then you can take E. Makeda as one list and then take another list that's really good against E. Kane and always pick that list. Because if E. Makeda is an option, E. Haley cannot be dropped because E. Haley will automatically lose. Unless you have a Stormwall and a Thorn and some other stuff. But if you have two Stormwalls and Haley, E. Makeda is just going to run all over it. Thank you for the lesson, Nick. And if you have P. Kruger, you can't drop E. Kane. I mean, he's just – P. Kruger's going to run up there and just annihilate the list. You just got to protect him. And so then whatever other list you play is what's going to end up having to play Haley. So you just have to take your list that's good against Haley, which Circle has a tough time with. Yeah. Ekai is pretty good against E-Haley.
Ekai is really bad against other big casters.
Ekai is really bad in scenario.
No, Ekai is...
That is also
maybe against scenarios, but Ekai is a really good caster. Sure. I think we undervalue Ekai. She's got... She's really good. If a player is not really experienced in facing her. It has the ability, since we're talking about psychology, to really mine.
Took two of your heavies and I'm back here.
Two of your heavies are mine, back.
That is probably the most frustrating thing ever, is when you're losing pieces and you can't get anything back in the turn.
Exactly.
Even good players and experienced players, it will start to get under their skin.
And even when Lich feats and doesn't auto-win right there, he's still, all of that stuff you have already killed and it goes away.
Yeah.
It's not still on the board. When you can just take two heavies away and then everything is still there facing you, it's really rough.
Yeah. That's the other thing. E-Lich is obviously the best example. I think Epic Morvana is a lesser example. The psychology and the fear that you can, when people are afraid of certain parts of your lists, they will also kind of do stupid things, maybe play too cautiously, try and bait stuff out, or just do, randomly stupid things. Like, I've had people, they're like, if I'm playing E-Lich, and they're playing, I guess, Protectorate, then they'll try and bait me out.
Run a jack up there.
Yeah, no, they'll try and
get you to feed on it, and then you just kill with Banes.
Exactly. I'm going to try and give him a feat early, so he can't feed on my caster, so I'm going to, pop Harbinger's feat really early, so he tries to blow up his guys, then I'm going to send out one Warjack, so he's going to feat and kill. It's like, no, I'm not going to do that. I know what you're trying to get me to do, I'm just going to try and kill it normally.
Both of these players sound bad.
Yeah, I know, right? But try it,
Mike is smart.
I am really awful, in my defense. I haven't played this game in
he popped Harbinger's feet, an excellent opportunity to kill my own people.
No, because that's what you can do, I'm just saying, that's how Tom Guan killed the Harbinger.
To be fair, I have
Tom Guan annihilated.
Of that happening with ridiculous results.
Yeah.
They took him into the feet, and then brought Lich forward, feeded, brought him back.
And killed Harbinger. Harbinger ran to the middle of the table and feeded. That's a vengeance move.
Yeah. He killed one, so he got the vengeance move.
And they all blew up.
Vengeance move.
And then he feeded and killed Harbinger, who was standing out there in the middle of the table with no focus.
It's actually pretty slick, yeah.
Yeah.
But the thing is, the Harbinger was like, dude,
one of these players is good.
No, the Harbinger player was like, oh, he's just gonna walk up and try and feed on this Warjack and I'm gonna kill it.
That good if he only killed one Bane Knight.
I think he killed, honestly, more than that.
Okay.
But the main thing is, Tom's like, alright, my entire unit's gonna die to your feet now, and I'm gonna bring him back and feed on you, and you're dead.
Well, another aspect of that is feats.
Yeah.
I mean, the psychology of a strong feat, and I talked to Keith about it quite a bit.
Kruger 2, oh, I hate it.
Right, but I mean, the psychology of having a feat and not using it. E. Gatsby is the best example. You get so much power and board control and dominance in a game from a planning perspective just by not feeding with Gatsby. Just having it. And being like, at any moment, I could come up and wipe out huge chunks of your board. E. Kane is the same way. Because at any moment...
It's probably the second most.
Yeah, if your caster is within 19 inches of me, I'm going to kill you.
Man, as soon as Kane pops his feet, I'm like, all right, let's play this game now.
Exactly. And so it's so much better. Every time I'm playing Kane, I just don't feed. And sometimes, and I think that's why I should have feeded against Chuck, looking back on it in the finals of the last chance at War Machine.
Oh, you should have won that game.
I had a chance to win, and I didn't because I didn't feed. But if I would have feeded and killed Nightmare and killed the other Jack, it would have been good. But I at that point, I was really just trying to save the power.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Elitch is obviously the biggest threat in the game. And last time I played Mike in a tournament, which was at Clash, he'd killed most of my army, and I was pretty much just running Elitch towards him. And the Harbinger was at the back of the table waving at me, and I just could not get there because the one Reckoner was trying to move into position. And it's eventually something stupid happened with the time, and they called the time, and I had to do something ridiculous. But yeah, if you are holding onto their feet, you pretty much just make them run away if you can hold it long enough.
Right. Siege, I used to do the same thing with Siege. Siege is really good at, especially if he takes one from Squire, puts Arcane Shield on himself and full camp 7 and runs forward.
That's a little bit different though, because if Siege if he starts to lose his army, then he loses a lot of that power.
Right. It's
Whereas
different.
Kane has it all in his hand and, and Gatsby needs to lose his army anyway.
It's different, but it's similar in that you can use the power of a model, of a caster of a feat in order to control board state. So yeah. if I take a feat like Siege's, and I push it 10 inches up the board, and I make him unkillable, but seemingly unkillable. He's armor 27 with, you know, 17, 18 boxes, whatever. He's there. The caster is out there in front of the rest of the stuff in his army. You feel like you have to do something about it. Threaten him. Put a heavy into him. Like, put a heavy on him. Just run and engage. But at the same time, he hasn't feated yet, so you have to move your caster backwards. So, like, you can psychologically impose your will on
him. I kind of feel the same way about Pisev's feat.
Well, Pisev's feat is different. He dies.
I'm totally kidding. I did not feel the same way.
I was like, Pisev
nothing like that.
I was like, Pisev needs to never be anywhere. He needs to pretend like he doesn't have a feat.
Y'all were all like, yeah, yeah, I can see that. Yeah. And then y'all were thinking about it. You're like, wait, should I be the one that shakes my head? No. I'm like, no, I don't have any casters that have that.
Ema Kane is probably scoring the best example of that.
So would we say that, like, for power... Are we saying those power feats or just feats in general should be held as long as possible?
Because it's not even that they should be held as long as possible. Feats. It's just like, if you're playing... You know, and maybe a lot of guys that, like, you know, travel to 3, 4, 5 tournaments a year know this already, but if you're playing Gatsby or E. Kane or Bethane is another decent example.
Yeah.
Just a caster that suddenly can generate large amounts of offensive output, just realize how much power is in the knowledge that you can do it. Try to figure out, if I can do it, what does my opponent have to do in consideration of that? And think one step further in how do I position myself to make him move in a way, and how do I take advantage of the way I'm forcing him to move without actually spending it, so that way that power is retained. Because the moment you feat with Gatsby, the whole game changes. The moment you feat with Kane, the whole game changes.
It's because that's the funny thing is, like, I know everyone always wants to know, since feats are usually so game-changing, if spectators walk up and they ask someone who's been watching it for a while, they're like, hey, has he feated yet? And you're like, no, yes. And you're like, oh, well, shit, the game's completely different. The biggest ones are Asphyxius and Kane are the biggest examples. Like, you can walk up, you're like, man, that guy is just getting his crap kicked in. You're like, oh, wait, is he feated yet? No.
Dude, I can't tell you.
Never mind, he might still crush him.
I can't tell you how many times I've seen a Lich game where, like, has he feated yet? No. And the person looks great. And then, like, John, it happened to John. It happened to fucking everybody. And, like, they're just... destroyed everything in Lich's army, and then you walk away from the table and you come back 2 minutes later and Lich feated
and won the game
and killed the caster.
When you walk up and ask, hey, has Elitch feated yet? What you're really asking is, hey, are those two heavies actually still on the board, or are they just not dead yet?
Right. Yeah. But it's one of those things where you know the other player is probably feeling a lot of stress because they know probably if you've annihilated their army or you've cut them down a lot, and now that player with the powerful feat is behind, they know that that feat is coming soon. Because they're either going to try to get equal or just try to kill them outright. So I think they probably just start playing a lot more defensively than they normally would.
It's too hard against Lich.
Exactly.
It's hard to play defensively. What are you going to block?
Whatever this podcast has degenerated into Elitch's overpower.
No. It hasn't at all. I'm just saying, like, especially with E. Kane. Once you start limiting the number of models on the board, there's only so many targets for E. Kane's
feet. I'd rather play Lich than
Model. That's true.
You know? I mean, and that's why, like, when I play E. Kane against Thrios, I don't feat. Because once you feat, Thrios can just full camp and come. Like, just come at you. He just comes right at you.
Just run to engage Kane.
Right. Like, you just, at least in my build, I don't have a lot of heavies or Stormwall or anything crazy like that. I have a couple hunters, but even a full camp Thrios, I mean, he laughs at full at hunters.
Yeah. Now, that was the funny thing whenever someone was trying to tell me how Kane, like, would normally deal with Epic Asphyxius. You're like, oh yeah, you just feat and just RFP, Tartars from the game and he can't kill you. He's like, no, but the flip side is like, if you lose your hunters and the lich is running at you on full camp for the rest of the game, then you can't really kill him. If you've killed his hunters and he's already feeded.
Even if you have your hunters, that's still not great.
Yeah, it seems bad.
I'm just saying, people were always saying, you just use your feed immediately to remove Tartars. So, like, I don't know if that's the best
plan. No, I would do it.
Really? And then how would you I guess now that Warcasters can't contest, it's a slightly different game than it was, because now if you eliminate it down to E-Lich, you're probably fine, but.
Yeah, I would still do it. I
back
would still
in
feed.
2011
and
12,
I would also
could
try
just run at you.
I would also try to remove the Bane Thrall UA.
Well, yeah, of course.
Several of the Bane Knight. I mean, I would also try to remove from play many other models, but.
Yeah, I'm not saying that you would only get him, but.
You give me my feed against Tartarus, I'm taking it.
It'd be so cool to have RFP. Yeah. That's Kravos.
You give me a feed against Tartarus, I'm taking it.
God, I wish I
because yeah. only if I'm playing a player that's going to give me a feed against
Lich.
Gaspy?
I just doubt that's going to happen.
Okay, yeah, it shouldn't be happening.
So the best place for my feet is Tartarus. Now, if he changes his game plan, he's like, Gaspy's got this, and full camps,
well, all right, I'm going to harm him, and I'm going to do my best. Boosted Pal 12s, boosted Hunters, Holt. I'm just putting everything into him. And then once you get him down to a few boxes, because you can even do that over a couple rounds and be okay. And then just cloud him with Risen. Again, I'm thinking in terms of my list, but
yeah,
there are ways to deal with it.
Okay.
I just kill his army before it gets there. Harbinger's real good for that.
Yeah.
And then that's how I do it. I kill his army before it gets there, and then play defensive as I can. Don't give him charge lanes.
Well, you just have to get so far ahead that when he does, like,
when
eventually
he feeds,
gets
he has to get through the errants, and then the jacks, and then the
God,
book.
God, I hate errants more than anything else.
Before he can kill Harvey.
That's why I hate Cro-Mac more than anything else in this game.
But the real power, I think, with Lich is, I mean, his feet, but the knowledge of his feet.
The
turn. Keith, who is the best Lich player I've seen play. Also, yeah. I mean, he does that. He'll use the pat. He even told me I win a lot of games with Lich without ever feeding. And it's because he's played him so much that he knows how his opponents are going to react to the fact that he hasn't feeded yet. And he uses that information to think one extra step further than his opponent's thinking. Or can potentially think.
Interesting.
Yeah, because if you're playing Lich every time, the set of constant data that you're dealing with is, I haven't feeded yet. My opponent is playing this. This is what they should do against me. If they do anything else, it's the suboptimum move. If they make the optimum move, then this is how I'll react to it. So you're one whole step further.
And I think Morvana's going to be that way too. Not so much from a kill you standpoint, but holding the feet until you get up onto the scenario, and then jamming, and then keep controlling where they can move. That's what Will did today. It was really good.
The attrition is so
strong.
He
waited a turn longer than I thought he was going to, and it ended up being the right move because he was able to keep me out of the zone by just feeding, killing, clearing the zone, feeding, and then just jamming everything on my stuff to where I couldn't get into the zone, stuff that he couldn't kill. And so he dominates.
See, I halfway agree with you. I don't know that holding her feet is always necessarily that big of an edge psychologically, like from a planning perspective. What's good about her feet from a next step level is that you know at any time during your opponent's turn where you can put your brought back models during your turn, which allows you to then think about what they're going to do on their turn. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So you know at any time you can bring back your models and exactly where you're going to place them. Not necessarily where you could, but where you plan on placing them.
Right, assuming that they don't kill off the unit.
Well, right. Yeah, I'm assuming that you are taking precautions to prevent that from happening. It's not, maybe playing with Will and seeing how easy it is to do that makes us take for granted how easy it is.
Sure.
But, I think there's some power in her feet because from a planning perspective, I don't necessarily know holding it though. But I didn't see y'all play today.
I feel like Nick is going to be an amazing Emor Amana player when he switches to Serval.
How long do you give him? Like 4 months?
Three.
3 months?
I mean, Scorn just can't beat Morvana. So
he's already been hating on his faction so much. I mean, he was so pumped up about it.
Scorn. Nick is the best Scorn player in the country that's playing Scorn right now. If Watt's playing Protectorate,
he's playing Scorn though.
Oh, okay.
Is he back to Scorn?
But Nick. Nick. Because he dropped.
I don't know.
He still also is Protectorate. Nick. Can Scorn beat Morvana?
I mean, technically yes. It's a really rough matchup. Again, it just comes down to the fact that it's the same thing as the Harvey problem, that you don't have good shooting that can really make them play honest.
Yeah.
And it's even worse when they have transfers, because like Harvey, you know, you put one shot into her and she dies with, you know, Lady Ghost, she's gonna transfer it away.
Five times. Yeah.
I'm sure it's not unbeatable, but I mean, it's very demoralizing.
It's your white whale
playing that matchup over and over against Will.
That's the truth. It's like me playing against Will's Cro-Mag. It's like, why do I bother?
Emor Vaughn is not unbeatable for Scorn. I will say that Will playing Emor Vaughn might be unbeatable for Scorn.
Fair enough.
I'm not saying that's
kind of like Crix and his Cro-Mag.
Very potentially true.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Crix will never be able to beat Will's Cro-Mag list. The barring is horrible dice. Like, it just cannot happen. I'm convinced of this 100%.
The issue he used to have was Pete Denny with Cro-Mag.
Yeah.
And then Eric taught him, this is the trick.
Yeah.
You do this trick, you will beat Pete Denny 100 out of 100 times.
That's yeah. True. I really wish Eric hadn't taught him that. That's the closest I ever got to beating his Cro-Mag list was with Pete Denny before Eric, when I was still playing Eric's build.
That's where he puts out all the keeps feats, charges, casts bestial, and then he just never gets to arc anything ever.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty much the thing. You first turn feat.
Yeah.
Yeah, top of one or bottom of one, either way.
Yeah, and so you have to get bestial out as soon as you can, like, up there, because And then Crix just cries.
It's like Billy told Keith how to beat Haley, like, we're all just screwing ourselves here.
I did.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
At TempoCon, I was here's how Gatsby will never, ever, ever lose to E. Haley.
I will say that Eric figured it out when he played you after he hadn't played for a long time. You're like, Eric's like, dude, I think this is just terrible for me. Because I was sitting there watching him, like, yeah, it fucking sucks.
I'll beat Eric the second time. The only reason he beat me is because he had that woods that he could chain. Like, he could use two clouds in the whole forest.
For the record, Eric definitely does not listen to this podcast.
Right. But at the same time, though,
I'll tell him myself.
At the same time, though, Eric also kind of figured out the same thing that you told Keith.
Yeah.
In
Eric
that game.
Fast
clouds are the key.
Yeah. Well, and splitting the army, which you normally would never ever do.
Shh.
Oh, sorry.
Well, we gave away Will's tech, might as well give away.
But there's nothing you can do to answer that tech. Like, Will's tag is just like, this is what I'm gonna do. Beat it.
You can't.
Yeah, I don't.
That's true. Unanswerable tech is way better.
Do I
want to
make a stupid bet right now?
I wasn't like, here's exactly how to beat Will. Every time.
I think I'm gonna make a stupid bet. If a Crix player can beat Will in a tournament setting, I will.
He has Cro-Mag.
When he's playing Cro-Mag, yes. I'm sorry.
You will get a tattoo.
No, we're stopping it right there. We're not getting
a tattoo of their face.
We're not doing another one of those
on your lower back.
That was dangerously close to me losing to Flanzer.
That's awesome you beat Flanzer.
All right, so what's the actual bet? What are you going to toss out there?
Do you want to do it for money or for something else? Billy usually has the better ideas on these things. I'm not creative. What's it going to be, Billy?
You have to play shirtless for 2 rounds.
No one wants to see that, though.
So you got to do it.
I think it'd be kind of funny.
That's part of it. 2 rounds.
All right. That's definitely not a very good bet.
No, actually, that's kind of bad.
You could get a tattoo that says...
What do you mean that's not a good bet?
That says Epic Fat Asian.
Do you want to see him shirtless?
Yes.
No.
I can't wait.
Why would you want that?
Show me. Let's do it. I got a 5.
Whoa, stop right there.
Don't you think it's fair to punish them for beating Will, too?
Yeah, I guess we'd have to get Will here to see what he'd be willing to do.
What?
No.
I'm saying punish with your shirt off.
Oh, yeah.
He's jabbing you and pumping up the bet at the same time.
I don't know. I'll figure out something. But if a Crix player can actually beat Will in a tournament when he's playing his Cro-Mag list, I will...
God, why did you even start this line of conversation?
He'll get
this
a tattoo
boring.
Under
think
his,
of the bet.
Of
let us
tongue.
Know later. Yeah. So, anyway, my topic was sort of me.
We're totally going to forget to make news and announcements, aren't we?
No, we're not, because you're going to remind us every 5 minutes.
I'm about to move it along right here.
All right.
Well, we'll do news and announcements now. We're at like 45 minutes already. So.
Yeah, but half of this is garbage.
No, but we had to cut that whole section of
Yeah, that's like a minute.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
It felt like we talked about it longer.
Yeah. All right, continue.
Things were said. Mistakes were made.
All right. Anyways, all right,
so news
on.
And announcements. I'll let Billy talk about his...
Well, are we really to the end already? We're not going to put some other stuff in between? Are we going to do news and announcements and then go to other stuff?
Yeah, we're going to do questions.
And the questions.
Like
then we're going to talk about what we're going to...
Wait, we talked about Haley and Kane as like a good list chicken build based on your ability to control the choice matchups, but does anybody else have any examples of that?
I don't have one. Like, in my faction... No, I can't control anything that they do. I just know that whenever I look at the list, I always know what they're gonna drop. Like, if they have Rhett, and they're a good player, and they've got Ion and Holt in Ossian, they're gonna drop Ossian. If they've got Kador, and they've got Butcher and E-Rusk, they're probably gonna drop E-Rusk.
I mean, really, any skewless can do that, Shay with his pirate boat can do it, Xerxes Brick can do it.
Xerxes Brick.
So you're saying put in a skew list and it forces your opponent into a predictable list choice.
Yeah, but at the same time, it also forces you into a predictable choice. Unless it's like the list that you want to drop is your better list or the one you love or the one you're most experienced with or is like the best.
It does. Well, yeah. I see what you're saying.
I think what we're finding out here is that you're in a pretty unique situation, Billy.
And you know what this goes into? Iron Gauntlet. Ugh.
Yeah, it's going to be a problem. Because
who wants to go flip coins all day?
Well, I could play Harbinger and somebody else. And it's basically like if I pick the wrong list against – if I pick against the list that I think they're going to drop, then I win. And if I don't pick that one and they all pick right, the other list, then I lose.
Let's throw an example out there. What are you thinking about taking?
Thinking about taking Harbinger and Eloth.
I think those are the two that you're – I was going to guess that those are the two.
Okay, Harbinger and Eloth. So let's say I take Ehaley, Egaspy.
Mm-hmm. If you drop Haley and I drop Harbinger, then I lose.
Yes.
I think you also don't like it if you, like, Eloth is not especially really against like Ehaley.
I agree.
Yeah.
It's not horrible, but
both of those are not great.
It's actually pretty good. It's good on, I can play it two different ways.
I'm saying it's not good for the Epic Lilith.
I'll beat the crap out of Lich with Harbinger.
Yeah. Let's save analysis of, Iron Gauntlet matchups for another day.
What? Yeah.
Whoa.
Why? We're running along.
We're like 50 minutes.
We're part of the List Chicken. We're talking about List Chicken.
We're like 50 minutes.
Nick, why are you taking out good content?
Do you know how long all the other
you won't let me and Mike
like
come on the same podcast
long.
Unless somebody cancels, okay? We're both on here. We're going to talk about Iron Gauntlet.
That's true, because five people is terrible.
Five people is god awful.
I'm not going to lie, though. If I could get, like, I'll get on with all the just abortion that was the website for Lock and Load. When I was trying to register.
God,
and
that website.
It was terrible. And I got on, and I, like, got into IG, and I was like, I'm not going to get into Masters because I already qualified, and I don't really have a reason. And I was like, I'll go to IG because Jake said he was going to play IG, and it seems like he's going to play it, and it should be fun. And then I registered for it, and then I started thinking about it. I was like, this is going to be terrible. I'm going to be playing Paper, Rock, Scissors, and I'm going to lose to people that I shouldn't lose to because I picked the wrong list. And if I could drop out of IG now and get into Masters, I totally would.
Well, you can drop out of IG.
You cannot get into Masters, though.
Yeah, that's the problem. So, anyway.
Well, I think it's like you said. If you pick Harbinger and I pick Lilith, or I pick Haley, you're in trouble. If you pick Harbinger and I pick Gaspy, you're good. True. If I pick Gaspy and you pick Lilith, you're solid. If I pick Haley and you pick Lilith, you're in trouble. Yeah. So in that situation, I would just pick Haley. Yeah, you would lose.
And it's going to be that.
it's pretty much how
it's like
goes.
It's really messed up game theory because there's no
it's
going to
be
equilibrium.
It's going to be that over and over and over again. And what you're going to have is you're going to have it.
But if you take if you take two all comers lists, and that's the general solution, then you lose to the super skew lists like E Lilith and E Haley. Yep. And
yeah, I don't think general list is the solution to this. It's being lucky, which isn't really a solution, but like,
yeah, I feel like
just dodge your matchups.
I feel like that's what's going to happen is that you're going to have better players losing to worse players because they picked the wrong list, and then you're going to have like weird. It's going to be a weird tournament.
It's another, and what it is, it's another layer of, because this game should, I mean, it's a dice game. It's going to have some luck. There's going to be some luck involved, but it's about controlling your luck and creating your own luck. But this is a whole other layer of luck that drastically affects the rest of it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it could be a really cool format. We've never seen it before. It's just all in
but
theory
you knew
right now.
That I knew that you knew.
Exactly.
That I knew that you knew.
A little of that already happens.
What if you overestimate
right
your...
Yes, I do.
What if
you have two of them?
Yes.
I can play as Haley.
Inconceivable.
I also have
I
whatever Crixie if you want to play that.
I have a whole extra unit of Gun Mages.
I'll bring Haley and Morvana.
I think I have two extra units of Gun Mages. I have the list. I have a Signar army upstairs.
Mike has the entire.
I have my Signar army.
Haley and Harbinger, or Haley and Lilith, is way better than
Haley. I think I actually don't think Harbinger is that good in this one.
I'm not playing IG. Man.
Harbinger
to win.
Harbinger can.
We're playing at Masters. I want you to lose. You to lose. Him to win.
I'm going to be judging something.
Truth.
So.
Okay.
And he's got to bring an army anyway.
Yeah. If you want to play Signar, I have. I have all the Boomhowlers, all the. Oh no! I just sold all my Risen.
No, he's not playing Signar. He just wants Haley.
Mike, I thought you were going to bring an empty bag and fill it with cock.
He needs two Stormwall.
I'm bringing
containers
an empty suitcase
and a regular tray. That's it. I can even carry the regular tray. He needs two colossal.
You're easy. Phone. I can do that.
I am easy. This is true. But Will is loose. I am easy.
If you want to play E Haley, seriously, let me know and I have the list. I have both of them are right there.
Are they
both painted?
How about Morvana?
No, I'll have to paint
one
of them. Lose to Crix.
Alright, seriously, we need to move on, guys. Trying to get...
Okay.
Get
the news and announcements. Mike, take it away.
I don't even know the date, but... No, we've got practice weekend coming up.
Mother's Day weekend. It's May 11th.
World's Team
Championships. This is the one I care about, but we've got everybody coming into town. It's going to be awesome. I think Chad just said that he got his work covered, so he's coming too. So it's going to be...
All 10 of us.
Yeah, all 10 of us.
All 10 of the World Team Championship players are going to be in Houston.
Practice weekend at Asbury
Games. May 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Yes, and so there is a tournament, 50-point tune-less tournament on Saturday.
Saturday.
Morning, May 11th.
May 11th.
And so we're trying to get... and it's going to be a fundraiser for Team USA, which it's still, I think, only 25.
Right. Will's throwing in some products.
Yeah. And so it should be a good time. Good people, fun to hang out with. I mean, I'll be there, but other than that, it should be.
We have Jesse coming down from Austin.
Yeah.
And he's bringing a couple people.
Yeah. I would be surprised if we didn't have some people come from Dallas or.
I would hope so.
The different metas.
Yeah, and Tom Gwan is coming.
Oh, Craig, is Tom Gwan really coming?
Yeah, everybody loves Tom.
I think he is. Obey.
How do you not like
I think
guy?
Craig is coming also. Flanders.
Craig's on the team.
I'm sorry. I always forget that. I don't know why. I should know
my
that.
My wife is graduating from grad school that day.
So you can't run the event?
So I can't run the event.
So it's going to fall to our fourth press ganger?
The hilarious thing
is that Hulu?
Yeah.
She doesn't care about the graduation. She didn't even want to walk. But her mother is flying down. My parents are driving in because the parents are coming.
Ah, you're screwed.
I'm pretty sure that's generally how it works. The students usually don't want to walk.
They do it
for the parents.
As soon as my parents head home, I'm going to Asgard.
So there is a thread in the PP. Is it the PP events forum? I don't know what was put out there. I'll double check. If there's not one, I'll make sure there's one tomorrow.
Yeah. Or I'm sure there'll be one posted on the Muse site soon enough.
So if you're listening to this and you find yourself in, you know, New Orleans or Lake Charles or Dallas or
anywhere,
or Amarillo, or
Phoenix,
Oklahoma City.
You want to drive?
Well, I mean, I'm trying to get those driving cities that are within 6 hours.
That's true. Tulsa
would be good. Yeah, Little Rock. Anyway, come down. It's going to be a blast. I think we can host, I think he set up to 60.
Oh, there's a lot. It'll be cramped if we get the full capacity, but he has, how many of those layout boards?
Enough for, he somewhere between 54 and 60. It was a number somewhere in there. I remember rounding it up to 60.
Get that many people.
The legacy players can play in the
No, the whole thing is shut out.
Yeah.
That's what he said. There's nothing else going on that day except this event.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And it's gonna be, honestly, I believe there's going to be more concentrated.
It will be probably the most impressive tournament, one of the most impressive tournaments in terms of skill.
That
happens all year.
There'll just be a lot of
The WTC America team is currently 5-for-5.
6-for-6.
No, 5-for-5.
6-for-6.
At War Machine Week qualifier.
6-for-6.
That they have been to.
Okay, yeah. Keith is a freebie. So.
What do you mean 6-for-6? They've only been 5.
But, well, Keith, okay, out of the 7 tournaments.
There have been...
Out of the 7.
Yeah.
Intermountain.
Because the
Intermountain Cup was 7.
And a Deputy
Contest happened.
Yeah, there were no WTC people.
There were 6. There were 6 qualifiers?
It's 6. It's 6.
Oh, we got 5 out of them. So,
no.
Oh, congrats to Jake Van Dien.
Yeah. Jake just took down a Deputy.
I don't think he really needs it because he's got it all online. But good job, Jake. I don't think anybody was surprised. We all have money on you. So
I was just the bigger question was when chat. Jake was actually going to qualify, not if he was. I was like, why isn't Jake qualified yet?
Yeah. I'm just saying.
I hate that format.
Hats off to the council. Not for me. I still have to earn it. But for having six of six for tournaments that members were present at.
All I'm going to say is,
sure it's only 5-for-5. What are the 6?
Okay.
We have 6 qualified.
Keith is qualified.
Yeah.
Okay. Keith, Mike, Jake, Will, Brian White,
Brian
Crusoe.
Craig. That's the one I forgot.
Yeah. Brian Craig.
Okay. Yeah. We didn't have anybody at Intermountain.
Yeah.
And that's why it went.
That's because everyone was at the same weekend at Mayhem Cup.
I mean, not that Trevor won, right?
No, yeah. Scott Ray did.
Yeah. Scott.
And I'm not
in the same pod. I'm in the right podcast. So,
I'm just gonna say, for all you people that are on, the WTC scene, if you don't make it into War Machine Weekend Invitational, I will ridicule you.
And I'm
ridicule now.
If I don't,
yeah,
I will
Mike is immune to it. So,
right, anyway, so moving on, news and announcements. I wanted to just talk again briefly about the Feast of Blades. Sam sent us an email about it. We didn't really give it a proper plug last time.
Is that the one that's the National
Beer Festival?
The Beer Festival?
Yes.
Yeah.
That fucking sounds amazing. We should go, Billy.
Yeah. What are we talking about?
It's a beer... The Great American Beer Festival is happening at the same time as this tournament.
They're actually
in Denver.
They're actually pairing the events together somehow.
Never mind.
guys, simmer down and let me go through the announcement and talk about it.
All right.
So it's Feast of Blades.
We should go.
It's October 11th through 13th in Denver, Colorado. They're going to be running a full slate of War Machine events, including Iron Arena. So they have a hardcore and a 42-point tournament going on Friday. A 2-list 50-point divide and conquer on Saturday. Who's the boss? That's always fun on Saturday. Then Sunday.
Hey, we know who the boss is.
No, not.
We know who the boss
is. He has a trophy that says he's the boss.
It says, I'm the boss.
Then on Sunday, they have a Masters event and a 35-point
No, it doesn't say I'm the tournament. Boss. It says the boss.
So that's Feast for Blades. It sounds like it's going to be pretty sweet. You guys should think about going if you're in the area, and probably even if you're not in the area. So
in the area, you're like, here.
Yeah, so that's the weekend after the WTC?
No, it's the same weekend.
Is it? No, it's the weekend after.
Yeah,
so we could just fly back right into Denver.
That seems horrible.
Dude, it's not horrible.
Amsterdam?
Yeah. Oh. It's going to be fine.
Dude, I'll still be high.
We'll probably both will. That'll make it even better.
All right.
All right, so...
that's not getting cut out, is it?
It's fine. Not at all.
Things happen.
So Lock and Load is coming up in, what, about a month?
A little bit over.
It's only a month away.
By the time it's posted, it'll be a month.
Yes, especially since...
Okay, Nick, it's up to us, man.
Yeah, you and me. So I made a bet with Mike.
And Chad.
I'm probably going
to
lose.
20-1 Wait, what's it up to you? Why is it up to y'all?
We've got to win Lock and Load.
Because we got to win. We're out of the four of us, it's up to us.
So it's up to you and Chad, not me.
Oh, yeah. Asgard needs more qualifiers.
Well, you're third. You're third in the list of importance to win it.
No, so I made a bet 20-1 with Mike that out of, what was it, Adepticon, Gen Con, The Last Chance Qualifier,
Lock and Load,
and War Games Con, that those five events will be won by Jake Van Meter, Billy, myself, Flanzer, and Jeremy Lee. Those will be the five qualifiers.
This is a very specific bet.
It is.
And you got 20-1 odds.
I have 20-1 odods.
That's why he got 20-1.
And how much did you bet?
$20.
$20 to $400.
Yeah, there's quite a disparity here.
I think you got really favorable odds on that one, Mike.
Yeah.
I felt like I did a pretty good job of handicapping in my favor, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, God, I wish I could. Sweet if I win that, though.
Yeah, it was.
Well, Jake being the only running member during Adepticon and winning it, that was pretty good for you.
But I think Jeremy Lee is the only running member at Gen Con.
Yeah, he is. The only one from this group. He's not going to Lock and Load, though.
Although, I feel like I can look at the...
No, he's going to War Games Con.
Oh, he's going to be there, too,
That's true, but he's the only one at Gen Con. He has to win Gen Con.
Oh, so if he wins War Games Con, you're out. Because he's not going to pay for Gen Con.
I have to go back and I have to...
I'm going to have to scoop.
Huh?
I'm kidding.
I don't know. Whatever. Nobody cares.
No, Jeremy's already decided he's going to Gen Con. Because he's not going to Lock.
What other events are there? So then War Games Con after that, that's going to be sweet.
What are the dates on War Games Con?
June 7th?
It's the weekend after Lock and Load. Yeah, we're
going to
hate...
I'm going to Seattle for Lock and Load, then coming back, going to Austin. And Craig's going to be with us all week.
For the whole week?
For the whole week.
Sweet.
Then we're going to Lock and Load.
I love Craig, man.
No, we're going to War Games Con. Then I'm going on a retreat to Seattle with my company.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Billy travels a lot.
So, yeah, that's a War Machine weekend.
Go to Orleans day after tomorrow.
We actually have lots of people flying in for it. We got Craig, Jake, I think Flames is going to fly
in. Is Major Tusk coming down?
I think he's coming down
with the wheel, is what I heard.
100%. I've heard nothing about this, and as the person who put together the event schedule, I probably would have been informed if that were the case.
Alright, I could be making it up, but I thought Will said that. But he could be lying or wrong.
That'd be awesome if he came down on a random, Sunday with the wheel.
It's his wheel that they're using at Lock and Load, right?
I believe so, yeah.
That is so cool. I hope they're helping.
I'm signed up for Who's the Boss at Lock and Load.
Well, I didn't know if Privateer Press was running
the
it.
Most meandering news announcement.
It's awesome. Okay.
Alright.
Also, Space City Con Mayhem Cup /
Yeah, Mayhem Cup 2.0.
Wait. Mayhem Cup is Space City Con?
Yes.
Yeah.
When is that?
It's August 2nd through 4th.
It's going to be awesome.
I should know this.
Dude, there's
It's in our city, Billy. You had better show up.
Hey, who's the guy that's going to be at Space City Con that Colin was all hard
over
about?
That thing?
Oh, shoot. There's a bunch of people.
Space City Con?
Yeah.
Dude, y'all...
What?
Y'all check out...
Billy's company's going to be all over Space City Con, so he's going to, get found out.
I'm going to be discovered.
Okay, but y'all go check out the website for Space City Con, because there's, really a lot of cool entertainment.
Yeah.
They're doing a pretty good job of getting, a lot of
I'm actually sci-fi impressed.
They have one of the hot chicks from...
Jewel State?
Yeah, Jewel State's going to be there.
Oh, is that the hot chick from Battlestar Galactica?
No, that's the hot chick from Firefly.
So we have the hot chick from Battlestar Galactica. Not the hottest of them,
to be fair. Is it the Asian or the white girl?
I have the Playboy with her in it.
Oh my god.
I do.
Okay, her. Okay.
Yeah.
D. I think that's her name.
I've got...
No, not D. D was the navigator or whatever.
No, D was the engineer chick.
You talking about Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
Talking about
who's the chick Dior that married the mechanic guy?
I've got the Playboy with her in it. That's all I can tell you.
Yeah?
Whatever.
Alright. But there'll be lots of guests,
I had a dealer that worked for me that was in Playboy.
Oh my god.
I bet you got Tiflo. Anyway, so what are the dates again?
Watch our friends on our Facebook, I'll show you. What are the dates?
This podcast
this
is...
This is why both of you can't be on at the same time.
Why? This podcast is wretched beyond belief.
I don't know. I think we should take a vote and see how the viewers feel about this podcast.
If you like Mike and Billy on the podcast, please email.
Please press one.
No, they will take the other one that says, like, who do you like better, Crippled System or Normal Road to War? And if they say Crippled System, it's just...
What are you talking about? How about we vote one of you motherfuckers off the podcast and get one of us on?
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I don't think that's going to happen.
What is the email address?
I was going to say, I would be more afraid if I thought you guys were willing to show up every other week to do this.
Yeah, sorry. The whiskey got us here this time.
Yeah, exactly.
I feel like every once in a while, Billy is just like, man, people haven't heard me talk enough lately.
And people hear me talk every day, man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I get tired of hearing myself talk.
But anyways, so yeah, we'll be hosting the MAM Cup. Nick is writing up the events for that.
I'll get those to you eventually.
It's going to be the same format as, I think, the Mayhem
Cup. I don't know if it's going to be the exact same format. I might try to spice it up a little bit.
And I think if it's not broken, don't fix it.
And John has a lot more experience, and there's probably a reason he does it that way.
It's true.
And they're going to have really amazing air conditioning at that hotel.
Yeah. Well, last year the air conditioning broke until the convention started, and then it was 50 degrees the entire weekend.
That hotel is definitely right down the street from my office.
Yeah. But anyways, I think the hotel block is on the verge.
At least check out the website and see what's on there.
Oh. Oh yeah, there's also gonna be the author for the
Jim Butcher's gonna be there. That's a big draw for a lot of people.
Alright, yeah. I feel like there was another
email address
that we were supposed to.
I'll just go ahead and say, because I meant to talk about it last time, but Clash for a Cure. They've got their website up.
It's an amazing event. It's, if you can make it, it is so cool.
And they give out such loaded dice. It's so cool.
I will say, I think this year they're partnering with a convention, like Waco's convention, so it's going to be slightly different than it has been in past years.
It's also a War Machine Weekend qualifier alternate.
That is correct, yes. But it's a lot of fun. Rich and Jimmy and all those guys down there do a really great job. They're trying to build up the Central Texas convention scene, and I think it's going to be an amazing one.
Shh. Billy? Shh. Sorry, go ahead.
All right, I remembered what I wanted to announce.
All right, go ahead.
All right, so at Lock and Load, we are going to be having a podcast challenge little mini tournament where us, Yuuzhan Minis, Chain Attack, and Remove from Play will be playing in a tournament for podcast supremacy.
Yes, and they will all be wearing stripper thongs so you can come put dollar bills in their
No, that's not happening.
Their thongs while they're playing.
Pretty much it's going to be teams of three for this one at least. It's going to be Will, Nick, and myself representing Road to War. I can't remember who all is representing who at for the other podcasts, but pretty much seems to be best of three, and then whoever wins the tournament. I think the plan is to make it a recurring thing, and then the second one of this will be at War Machine Weekend. I think John has been talking with – I think he spoke with Carl, and it's going to be an official – he's going to put it up as an official event, and hopefully by that time we'll get it set up.
That's hilarious.
To where there will be, I think – hopefully.
We're going to run some contests with the podcast and maybe get some fan teams in there.
Yeah, I think the idea is to have six podcast teams and six fan teams by Lock and Load. By War Machine Weekend. And then, like, the first round, all the podcast teams play.
Billy and I will be on a fan team.
With Keith.
Well, Keith's actually on a podcast.
For Team Purple Shirts, win.
Let me go to the Twitter.
Nick was shoving those questions down our throat and then was totally unprepared for it.
That's true. All right, well, Billy, so somebody on Twitter, Realocene, wants to...
I love that guy.
You don't have any idea who that guy is?
Yeah, I do. I met him at WarGamesCon last year. He's real cool.
He wants to hear some talk about Signar Melee Infantry because he's growing weary of Nist, Forge Guard, Boomhauer, and Steelhead. So my response to that is Nist, Boomhauer, Forge Guard, and Steelhead are the Signar Infantry.
Best infantry in Signar.
I think if you're asking specifically about Storm Knights, which having played plenty of them and tons of them in Mark II and Mark I...
Well, you said melee, so it's not long gunners and trenchers.
Yeah.
All right. So
you're just better suited with the mercenaries you've listed. Now, I think in general,
you're
with certain unless you have certain casters.
I don't hate Stormguard with Eco.
I love Stormguard with Epic Striker. When you take 20 of them and they just rush at you and you pop your feet and they just get all up in someone's grill. But East Strikers, I don't think a top tier caster.
I also like Storm Nouns with Nemo 3. The thing is though, really, I think if you're gonna go, I think a East Striker list with Sword Knight spam is another legitimate way to go. I think if you throw Rupert and Archduke Runewood in there, I think you can run two, maybe three units if they're FA3, and throw a Stormwall in there for positive charge and get some pretty good consistent
turn after turn, get four, five, six of them in to wherever you need to go. Plus you have the mobility and the arcane shield and the deflection. I mean, you have some ways to protect them, and they're so cheap. I mean, you're getting 30 of them on the board for 18 points. I mean, that's so many bodies.
I think they're up at two.
And another really cool thing to do if you do that is throw Alexia in that list and then just cycle them constantly. You have Risen also running in there to jam. And you have Rupert in there, so you throw Tough on the Alexia Risen with maxed out Risen every single turn. It gets to a point where you're just grinding them down. And after you grind an attrition throughout the whole game, you end up with E Striker and his feet. And that's pretty much going to beat any other caster left.
You put Captain Jonas Murdoch on Alexia and the Risen so they benefit from positive charge and defeat.
Yeah,
that's janky as hell.
It's cool, but it's not good. It's cool, but it's not good.
In general, I think the Storm Nouns, Storm Knights are generally overcosted.
They're overcosted and they are really bad defensive stats.
I was about to say, and they just don't ever pay for themselves because they die on the approach. 12-15s are awful. Like,
not always, but most of the time.
Like the
they don't stay alive consistently enough to warrant their point cost.
I don't hate Stormblades, just the unit no attachments or anything as something to just run behind the heavy and kill whatever kills the heavy.
Nah, man.
See, Stormblades, I like the UA and
I love
the weapon attachments because
I take the UA.
It also gives you
full
guns.
Unit. Like, full blast.
The guns the guns can actually do some pretty cool work.
I would
work.
Take the guns over the UA. I used to love the UA too, but man, points.
But the assault is what you want.
The assault is it, man. That's where it's at.
Yeah, he's the one that gives them assault. If they didn't have assault, I would, that would not
all
be 3 points.
Credibility.
I haven't played Signar in about 2 years, so.
It is not. You used to be like the 8th best Signar player in the country.
Nah, he used to be one of the best.
Pre-Stormwall, I think Nick was probably one of the best Signar E-Haley players.
Yeah, one of the top three guys, I think. I don't even know the other two. I'm just not going to think you're
like
good enough.
I'm going to think I'm like an arrogant asshole. You guys keep saying things like that.
Like what?
Or they're just going to think you're a lot better than you are.
How does arrogant have anything to do with what we're saying?
You're just... Nick,
if we were like, man, all Nick does is brag about the size of his dick every day. He's just like, I got this massive dong. Then we'd be like, oh yeah, that's an arrogant guy. But you're just like, I'm bad. And we're like, no, you're really good. You're like, everyone thinks I'm arrogant because you motherfuckers here.
That's more me than you, Nick.
I don't know. If they're anything like me, whenever I listen to a podcast, like, unless I met them in person, the entire podcast is like just one giant disembodied voice.
No, your voice is pretty unique. I think he'll be okay.
He doesn't get it, but I get what you're saying.
All right. That's either here or there.
Sorry, man. I don't get it.
So that's Signar Infantry. Next question is from Marauder Mitch. Mike, what are the top three protector casters against the Legio?
Oh, man. There are none. No. I'm just kidding.
Zero.
No,
scoop
man.
It off.
I think Picryos is probably the best. Depends.
Picryos has been seeing a lot of play at our store recently, which is distressing to me because he kind of craps all over Crix.
I'm trying to see if I can play him instead of Harbinger as my second to Fiora, but I feel like Picryos, if you have the right build, I mean, you have to have Errants. I feel like you kind of have to have the Zealots. Jeremy and I kind of go back and forth on that. I think he's been
Jeremy
playing
had
Zealots
both of those in his list the other day.
Redeemer's good, and I think we both agree that like Redeemer Reckoner is a good battle group. I like having Iona and Holt in there. I think we got Roven. I don't know. But he does really well against, Lady Goat because you get the quick work shot with the Errant still after you kill whatever's on the ground if you do it correctly. I feel that I've been trying Krios 3 with two Templars a lot against Morvana, and the armor is pretty good against, most of the Morvana builds. I think it's still not ideal though. And then third caster, I've only tried Fiora once against her, but I did not feel like it went ideally.
I mean, if you don't have free that you recommend, you don't necessarily have to get free.
I want to try Psev against her though. Although I don't feel it's great that you lose Defender's Ward, but I don't think she's going to get so deep that she's knocking off I. And if you have a Seneschal, I feel like you can do a lot of work against the models
with concealment.
In Errant Seneschal?
Yeah. Errant Seneschal with Errants.
Alrighty. Next question. Casey Willis.
Sweet Casey. He's actually named Unsweet Casey. He's the guy who's the producer on Archer.
Okay. Oh man, that show is sweet.
Yeah.
That is a sweet fucking
show. That
show
is awesome.
He's really the producer of Archer?
Yeah, he's a producer on
Hats
Archer.
Hats off, man. You are producing way better shit than we are.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So, I actually really like his question because it's very different. And so basically he says that.
I feel like we should have him on the podcast. That show is so good.
I would probably be willing to have
him. Yeah, I'd be willing. That podcast is amazing. I mean,
probably be willing. Shut the fuck up. You can come on anytime. Like, it's convenient.
We've got single malt, Jack. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, winners.
But at that point, we were probably just talking about Archer the whole time.
That's true.
No, I see nothing wrong with this.
We would specifically not talk about archery, and we would talk about whatever unsweet Casey.
Yeah.
I don't know. Anyways, so are you sure that this is Casey Wilson's name?
I am positive. Okay. Yes.
I can't keep
him. Whatever. Archer's great, whether you're the real Casey or not.
So, last year he painted up an Ashland Tier 4 army for the War Machine Week in Hardcore. And apparently went well. He was chosen as one of the couple of armies to be reviewed for the Master Craftsman Award. And he says that, this year for Machine Weekend, he wants to paint up another Burk army, so that he can have a good, two-list, steamroller, spread. So he said that his old list lacked, armor cracking, and he wants recommendations for a good hardcore army that will also look good visually. And he says currently he's thinking about Damiano.
Yeah.
Because he thinks he can make them look cool, but he's really open to anything.
What was in the first one?
I'll do either
Ashland
Tier 4.
Either Damiano or Bart.
If you want armor cracking, both of those, Bart and Damiano,
like
do that a lot.
You could make such a cool-looking Bart list.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I would like to see like a Bart double galleon, because it has lots of...
I don't think you want... Not double galleon. Single galleon, not double galleon. Yeah, we're just used to saying Haley double Stormwall. Yeah.
Just because the galleon is, like, I mean, it's a cool-looking model. You could do lots of, like, really sweet mods, just because it has kind of that bodge-together look. You could, like, do all sorts of sweet mods to make it more interesting and make it your own. And as a Colossal, it's a really good centerpiece model that can draw a lot of attention if you paint it up really nice.
And it's great at cracking armor.
I feel like Bart is another good model that you can make look really cool.
You could run it with Nis, but I'm starting to like the idea of running Bart with Boom Howlers better.
To just jam them up while you
just
shoot.
Yeah, just to jam them up and just throw while shots in there. Yeah. I don't know. And Keith has probably thought more about it than me and decided that this was the way to go. But I think Bart, he uses Boom Howlers.
Bart works for Highborn, doesn't he?
No.
He doesn't?
I don't believe so. I don't think any of the pirate cast would work for Highborn.
Four-star.
Yeah, but I think you can take anything that works for Kador and Boom Howlers work for Kador.
Well, no, I was thinking because I would like to see dwarves with him.
Kador, yeah?
Hammer dwarves.
Boom Howlers work for Kador? I've never seen a Kador player.
Yes, they do. Yes. Boomhauers work for everyone.
Why don't Kador players take
Boomhauers? Kador players take Boomhauers.
I think Muse had this topic once and they never figured it out. I similarly am baffled as to what, because they're too busy, because Kayazi and Iron Fang Pikemen are complete assholes.
Boomhauers.
I don't know why they wouldn't take them.
Boomhauers with Joe's rifle corps behind them? Holy.
You're not getting line of sight.
Line of sight for the things you want to shoot with them.
Yeah, that's.
I play Kane, believe me. They don't block line of sight that bad.
I don't know, whatever.
Then, I don't know.
Anyway, so I think we're all in agreement that you should play Bart.
You know what?
Bart single galleon.
I'm calling bullshit. Boomhauers don't work for Kador. They would take him. Somebody would take
him. I'm pulling it up right now. Unless War Room eats my phone.
Alright, well.
Which somebody like talk about something.
We're moving on while they do that.
So Bart double galleon.
No, Bart single galleon.
We're just so used to saying caster double thingy.
Okay, so now, at this point in the podcast, we're gonna move on to the ranking of the top 15 players at Asgard Games in order.
It will not work.
Actually, I think that's going to be it for questions today. We have a couple extra that
it's crazy.
Are in the list, but several of them are circle questions, so we'll wait for Will to do those. And then some other ones, well, we'll just get to them later.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we didn't answer them in this episode.
But thank you for sending all the questions. We like had none, and now there's too many.
I always like to have a backlog so that we don't have to worry about running out. I will say, sending out a tweet and being like, we need more questions, gets you a lot of questions, which is awesome.
Yeah.
I hate the goat.
I'm gonna...
Right. So now we need to talk about what we're working on. Mike, what are you working on? Either one of you.
I'm working on a way to beat the goat.
Pete Denny as my second list.
Alright, Billy, what are you working on?
Blazers. Mastering Blazers.
Oh, I think those Blazers are so good.
They're really good. Here's the thing. They're automatic. Nine, if you have five, if you pay 10 points and get five of them, they're automatic. It's easy to play them. You know exactly what to do with them. They always get where they're going. They accomplish a mission you assign them. When you play three, it's a little more iffy. But I think you get 80% with three of what you get with five. So mathematically, it makes a lot more sense to take Ayana and Holt in three Blazers. So I'm taking three Blazers, and I'm trying to get as much as I normally get out of five with three. And it's taking...
Are Blazers 6'10"?
Yeah.
Man, Stormlances suck. They're just so bad.
Yeah, they are.
God. Here's the thing about Blazers. They do a much different thing than Stormlances do.
Stormlances die and are awful and suck. All right.
No. They're not as bad as you think they are.
I've played them a lot, and they have sucked every time.
Technically, you've played a lot of things, and I've sucked every time.
That's true.
I'm telling you, Stormlances have a place. They're not, I mean, I don't use them.
I don't think they have a place at 50 points. I think if you go wacky sack,
I think they're really good with each striker. I think you can make them work. And, I'm going to stick with that.
Okay.
I think you can make them work.
Alright, I'm working on winning a game. I have been on such an incredible losing streak, it's not even funny.
When's the last time you won a game?
Pierre's beaten me, Jeremy Lee's beaten me, Billy's beaten me, Will's beaten me.
I haven't played you in a long time.
That's true, because you don't play this game anymore.
That's a lie, I played up in Tulsa in that
He's a judge.
Tournament. I'm also a judge now.
No, but seriously, I've honestly been testing with a mammoth, I will probably get flack for saying this, but I have thus far been very unimpressed with how a mammoth actually plays.
Is he really route 3?
He's really rat 3. He can't actually directly shoot anything. And
except other Colossals, but at that point...
And as a 20-point gun platform, clearing out high-defense infantry is not enough. And his melee damage output is never going to be as good as any other two scoring.
Two bronze backs? Not
two
even close.
Backs, you know, a pair of gladiators and pain-givers and a mortifier for the same number of points. He's just never going to do as much work in melee as them. And he's also less durable than any other two scorn heavies, and can't be in as many places. So, I don't know. I've been very unimpressed thus far. I'm sure there's a place for him out there. I just haven't found it yet.
That's got to be so painful for you. You finally found a way that you can kill Harbinger, and then it's not good against anything else.
No, I think I might just start putting Red Rockets on all my lists.
Red Rockets are underrated.
Oh, those things are fantastic.
They're really good.
Actually, yeah, and I never see them. I don't think I've ever seen one on the table.
The one thing I have learned when testing with the Mammoth is, even having just one POW 14 boostable shot every turn, you can, you know, over the course of three turns, you know, mostly kill a heavy.
Wow, welcome to Wild World.
I know, right?
He's also good at, like, killing stupid stuff like Tartarus.
Not to mention, you can throw puppet strings on him and really get some work out of him.
Yeah.
I mean, he can snipe himself and really get really far with that shot, taking out some keys.
What's his base price? 12?
10.
So he goes range 14, POW 14, with a puppet master, a boosted puppet master.
I actually, rather than the mammoth, yeah. I kind of want to start trying to play around with him and Cannoneer.
Oh, you're gonna shooty scorn. Here comes Nick.
Like, just those two models and... and a Soul Ward and maybe some more Fjords.
How much
are they already going to be in the list anyways?
Do the Cannoneers have an armor lower?
No, they don't.
They don't. Okay.
How much? One lower mat.
POW 15.
One lower mat. Right?
What the
Cannoneers?
The Cannoneers mat 5.
Yeah.
Is there? Rat 5. I think Cannoneers are the female elephants.
Yeah, I saw one on the table one time and I was like, I was going to shoot that thing on the table.
It's probably not good, but it's something I'm thinking about trying out.
Are they girded? Is that their animus?
No, the girded is diminish.
Oh, which is actually pretty sweet.
It gives everything within 2 inches of them -2 on damage rolls. So they're effectively armor 20.
That's not bad.
No, that's fine. I mean...
Yeah, especially if you run them like near a sentry or something, mm-hmm. and you control the angles they have to come in.
I think that's what Chuck was doing with his Rasheth tier back at Gen Con.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still wanted to play that self animus.
But yeah, I bet you did.
Yeah, so... and it's, I mean, they're range 16 with the snipe animals, so that's pretty good. That'll reach out and touch somebody.
And they're POW respectful.
Once you put the puppet
so they have there. So they're essentially carrying defender cannons with Red Rocket.
Mortarthurg is so huge for scoring, man.
Yeah.
The Mortarthurg might really turn cannoneers on. Because the Rat 5 is less of a problem, and then if you just hit on the first go-round anyways, then you just get to use it on the damage roll, and that's good.
Yeah, do an extended slam on, a bronze bag or something.
Wait, what?
If you're playing them in the back, so once you engage, you can advance, do a power attack to knock them down, and then shoot, and then ancillary attack, shoot.
Yeah, but if a bronze back walks up and headbutts something, then it's going to die.
If a bronze back, bronze back's killing something.
Unless it's sprinted.
Or the bronze back can go up there, pick it up, throw it at something else, and then that. And
that's
then,
true. I will say...
I'm saying ancillary attack is something to consider.
I have
it's
very
knocked
recently
them up.
Learned in some of the games that I've been playing... So the gladiator, he's like the wizard beast. He just stands in the back and casts his animus. It's like the axer and
that was some pro level stuff. Putting him in front of the sentry, and then so I shot at him, leaving him out of the cray animus. So I'm like, oh, he's out of cray animus. I'll shoot at him.
That was the psychological game we were talking about.
I think that was just baller. That was just some pro.
I think we've told the story before, but what he's talking about is in our game at TempleCon in the team tournament. I purposely left my gladiator outside the Kraya Animus because I knew that it was going to be moving in the back, so it wasn't going to be getting charged by storm walls, so he would shoot at the gladiator rather than softening up the sentry.
They worked, because then the sentry was left with 5 goddamn boxes.
That's true.
How many boxes did I put on the gladiator? 9.
Which, when you include the 4 extra armor, or the 4 less damage you would do to the sentry.
I'm aware.
That is actually what killed it.
I'm aware.
What was I saying? Oh, so something cool you can do with a gladiator is I've been getting, you know, when I get jammed with infantry, the gladiator is just standing around there in the back, and he can usually get to like one, maybe two infantry models. So what I started doing with him is just having him walk up and two hand throw the one infantry he can get to at something. It's more value than him just walking up and punching the one guy.
It's actually hilarious. I've seen Nick do that a couple times. You just don't see it. Like, that's just, it doesn't occur to you. Mm-hmm. Mainly because a lot of times first of all, you don't usually expect power attacks, or maybe not usually, but it's like,
you should.
You should.
You really should.
Whenever you're looking at something, it's not immediately recognizable as opposed to, I'm gonna get charged in attack, or just meleeed or shot. But like, two-handed throws are kind of a wacky move that, like, less experienced players don't necessarily see all the time. Especially when you're doing it with your own guys. You're like, alright, Annihilator Man, you need to go and knock over that guy. The prospect just picks him up and throws him.
Well, it's like, for most Horde's factions, it's probably not worthwhile spending, like, 3 focus in order to kill one extra infantry
team. Yeah, well, you can whip it off. Why not?
Well, you can whip it off. Why not? Yeah. So.
And in case y'all don't know, Nick is, as long as Watt is playing Protectorate, Nick is the best Scorn player in the country, so take this advice.
I don't necessarily agree with this.
Take this advice as gospel.
Nick, everyone is going to think that you have an enormous ego.
That's true. I really don't. I'm actually really down on my War Machine abilities right now.
Good luck to you when you play Nick, because he's going to beat the hell out of you.
Yeah. Nick will kick your fucking ass, and I'll bet on Nick. So there.
$20. If you beat Nick, I will give you $20.
I sent that to the viewership.
All right.
I said that to the viewership. I'm like, kick your fucking ass.
Nick, you could make sweet side bets and really rake in the money.
If he's undefeated and you beat him, I'll give you $20.
Okay.
Also, if you see Nick at a con, be sure to go up to him and say, hey, I heard you sleep with dudes. He'll love it. He'll laugh. It's an inside joke.
You don't have to cut that. That wasn't near as bad as the other ones.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, that all seemed very out of place without all the other ones.
So?
No, it won't. Don't try to justify it out.
It's a total inside joke.
It's not even inside.
Editorial control is a wonderful thing, Billy.
Hey, you're the captain, baby. Yeah. Anyways, what else?
Oh, captain, my captain.
I cannot believe... Oh, God. All
right, and this podcast has become silly. Mike, do you want to rant for a little bit?
There's a lot. All right, I went to see Oblivion the other weekend. That movie fucking blows. Don't go see it.
I thought that movie was
It's an hour too
good.
Long, and you already know the twist at the end when you see the trailer.
The twist was pretty not that exciting.
No, and then you think the movie's just going to end, and then it continues going. It's like the same way Return of the King was like, okay, it's over, right? Like, no, fucking 30 more minutes.
It, like, continued into Oblivion?
Yeah. Thank you, Mike.
I feel like Mike is trying really hard to
Be
as cool as Nigel is when he rants about movies.
I will say that Tom Cruise has aged very gracefully. Apparently that guy's 50 years old and he doesn't look like it.
So...
Dude, if I had that much money, I
have 2 VIP tickets to the premiere of Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
I will go with
you. I don't really care about Iron Man.
I'm trying to find a date to go, and it's harder than you'd expect.
You're not going
to
find one on this podcast.
No,
well, you would, but no one wants to.
There's some pretty nerdy girl out there that wants to go. Signing out, this is Billy.
Alright, this is Nick.
This is Other Mike.
I'm Michael. Later, guys.
Peace out.